we will have Chris S. So I'll turn the meeting over to Chris.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here tonight. I was not here last week. I had some business that I had to be at, but I heard Peter was phenomenal. A lot of talk about some of the things that he said, and I'm very, very glad for that. I'll be sharing my experience and understanding of steps 10, 11, and 12 tonight a little bit. And I'll start with saying that if you've identified yourself as an alcoholic and you've come to believe that you need to engage in the AA process to get to the power that will relieve you of your alcoholism, you've made the decision to do that. You've done an inventory. You've done a fifth step. You've followed the six and seven step practices. And you've listed the people and the institutions that you've harmed with your character defects. And you've gone out and made direct amends to them wherever possible. You've pretty much had a spiritual awakening. I don't think that you can do those exercises without real serious change taking place in you. I know by the time I had gotten to the end of the first list that I actually completed, some amazing things started to happen in my life. That's the period of time where I started to take other people through the big book. This group kind of developed in my house. Some just unbelievable things were taking place in my life. And it was so apparent that there was a new power in my life. Something that was fueling me to do some really amazing things. Like, on my own, I have got to tell you, on my own, without that power, what happens is I isolate, I get drunk, I get resentful, and my life gets smaller and smaller and smaller. By coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, being exposed to the recovery program, and practicing it very, very imperfectly, I might add, I was exposed to a power that was transformative at all levels in my life, really, just transformative. Now, in step 10, I was thinking about step 10 a lot today. I'm the type of person, I haven't learned AA and then shut my mind. If you hear me do a workshop 2 years from now, I might be talking about completely different things because I allow myself to have an open mind and be open to new experiences. And as I move through some of these spiritual processes, I allow myself to be able to change my mind. You know what I mean? One of the saddest things that I see in AA is somebody that comes into AA, learns what they need to learn in the first 6 months, and that's it. They're bigoted toward anything new, anything different, anything that Joe Gerbilfeather, their sponsor, did not tell them. You know, they're not going any further than that, and it's really sad to see, because I believe that the spiritual life is something that we grow in, and we broaden and we deepen our experiences, and it's not something that we want to put the brakes on for. We want to be able to broaden and deepen. There's a lot in the literature that basically points us toward a lifetime goal of spiritual growth. Now, I was thinking, I've thought different things about step 10 over the years. Some of the things that I thought were that Bill needed a 12th step and jammed this in somewhere. Because step 10 really is talking about other steps and how you practice them. So I thought, you know, he needed a 12-step, and he's doubling up here. And I thought that for a while, way back when. And today I believe that it is so appropriate to have step 10 right after step 9, because we've just achieved a spiritual awakening. If we've really worked, if we've been painstaking about this course of spiritual action, we've had a spiritual awakening. You can lose a spiritual awakening. So what's more appropriate than to put a step after step 9 that tells us we need to practice these principles and these spiritual exercises on a daily basis? What would be more appropriate than that? There's a subtle genius to these steps that I truly believe that came from the power that we access. Because the more, you know, I've studied the history of AA, and there wasn't a wackier dude than Bill Wilson. You know what I mean? As he was moving into his upper years of spiritual growth, he would do things with Ouija boards and LSD and, you know, vitamin B12 to try to achieve spiritual consciousness. I mean, there wasn't a wackier dude than him. And for him to be the principal architect of this text is just beyond belief. I mean, the guy was like 4 years sober when this book was written, okay? I worry about leaving people with 4 years alone in my house. You know what I mean? Or like lending them my car. I think twice about that. You know, so for somebody with like 4 years to be able to have been basically the person assembling all of this information is just remarkable to me. But here we are. We're at step 10, which asks us to continue a number of things. And I believe that at the heart of this step, it's asking us that all of the lessons, all the exercises that we practiced that we got positive results from, let's learn to use them reactively. Let's learn to use them as we walk through the day. Because as alcoholics, we are very, very imperfect people. We're going to fall short in word, thought, and deed. Probably from the moment we get up in the morning, you know, if we're having relationships with people, we're screwing them up somehow, you know, that's just us. So let's learn how to use these exercises reactively. Let's learn how to, okay, I'm disturbed, you know, my boss is driving me crazy, you know, there's way too much stuff going on, I'm losing my mind, I'm starting to react, I'm starting to say things I don't want to say, I'm losing it. Pause when agitated or doubtful, and look for, a spot check inventory. Let's look. What is threat? What is being harmed, threatened, or interfered with in my instincts and ambitions? You know, go right there and take a look at it. Have I been wrong? If I'm wrong, I need to promptly admit it. I don't need to carry it around with me. As I've grown in Alcoholics Anonymous, and as I've put the years together, I've learned something about my spiritual condition. Emotionally, I'm more sensitive than I was when I first came in. When I first came into AA, I was out of my mind. You know, I thought like conflict resolution was like dynamite. You know, and just blow the people up, and that's how you deal with conflict resolution. So. And I was lying, cheating and stealing and hustling and manipulating and using, and I was self-will run riot. And I'm not saying I was comfortable with it, but I'll tell you this right now, if I acted that way today, for 5 minutes, I probably couldn't take it. I've become very emotionally sensitive. And for me to get out of whack, to get off the beam, I really do need these practices to be able to bring me back to some form of serenity, or to just be at least, you know, be able to deal with a situation without acting out in a way that I'm going to have to make amends for, or a way that's really inappropriate. Now, there's another thing that I've learned by being in Alcoholics Anonymous a long time. And that is, we lose a lot of people. I've said this before, even in this workshop, but it bears repeating. I've been around long enough to know that we lose half of the fellowship at least every 5 years. And I'll give you, for instance, and this is a statistic that I can't back up with facts, because trying to use accurate statistics in an anonymous program is an effort in futility. But you can bear this out by looking at coin sales. If you come from a large home group, just see how many coins are being bought at different intervals. And I'll give you, for instance, I'd say half of the people who have over 5 years have less than 10. Half the people that have over 10 years have less than 15. Half the people that have over 15 years have less than 20. You see where I'm going with this? Every 5 years we lose half of the fellowship. For one reason or another, they decide to stop coming. They can go back out and drink. They can retire somewhere. They can back off of meetings. I don't know, but they're leaving. Okay, they're not sticking around my home group. And what I've learned, what I've truly learned from working with a lot of people, I happen to sponsor a lot of people and have sponsored a lot of people for 15 years or more now. So I have some combined experience working with others. And here's what I've learned, that you have to put enough into AA to get enough back from AA to be able to stay. In other words, if you come in and you sit in the back and you don't work the steps and you don't get a sponsor and you don't share and you're not of service and you don't do anything, you just want to sit in the osmosis seat and soak everything up, you're not going to get enough of a charge back from AA to be able to stay. And somewhere along the line, you're going to figure that it's not working. It's not worth it. This isn't happening. I don't see the difference. The season finale of Friends is on tonight. I'm not going to the meeting. And, you know, you'll stay home and watch Slipper Vision or something like that. Or, you'll find a reason to not be in the meetings. Now, if you're in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're sponsoring people and you're going through the steps and you're practicing step 10 and you're busy, you're going to be receiving so much from the program of recovery that you're not going to, it's not even going to be an option for you to leave. It's not something that you would want to do. I heard one of the founding members of AA said, at first you have to go. Then you need to go. Then you want to go. Then you love to go. And that should be your evolution in Alcoholics Anonymous as far as meeting attendance and participation. You should know in the beginning that you have to, then you need to, then you want to, and then you love to. I'm luckily at a point today where I love participation in Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of the time it's the highlight of my day when I go to a meeting and I get FaceTime with my alcoholic friends. I've really made a life, wrapped my life around Alcoholics Anonymous instead of adding Alcoholics Anonymous as, like, you know, an addition. I really have gotten to the point where Alcoholics Anonymous is my life, and I work when I'm not going to meetings, and, you know, I have relationships when I'm not going to meetings, and I have friendships when I'm not at meetings and working with other people, and that's just where I come from. And I think the only way to get there is to be really, really active in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I believe step 10, without getting into the mechanics, you can read the mechanics yourself or listen to people who can explain them better than me. I think it's using everything you learn in Alcoholics Anonymous in a reactive way. When something comes up in your life that you need to inventory, you inventory. When you've done something wrong and it requires an amends or a corrective action, use the corrective action. When something requires prayer and meditation, you know, do that. When you need to talk to somebody about something you've done, when you need to get current with somebody about an issue in your life, you need to share that. You need to have open communication with another alcoholic. And if you continue to do these things, you're going to continue to stay sober. You can going to continue to grow in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're going to want to and love to participate. And that way you're not going anywhere. You know what I mean? You're not going anywhere. It's not okay to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. I work with a ton of relapsers. Okay? And I'll tell you right now, it's not okay to stop going to meetings, go out, relapse, come back and say, I did it one more time. That's not acceptable. It's not okay. And I don't think we should applaud the people when they're coming back, because it's not okay to go back out. You know? I heard one guy share one time, you know, please stop clapping for me every time I come back. My problem is I think I can keep coming back. This is a deadly illness. We have buried a few people from the surrounding meeting area this last year. This disease will drag you into isolation and murder your ass. Murder you in an absolutely ugly, unacceptable way. So it's not okay to leave AA. There's one thing in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that says you need to do if you relapse and you come back, and that's redouble your effort. Redouble your effort. That's the one thing it tells you need to do. And redoubling your effort would indicate that you need to double up on what you were doing when you failed. If you weren't working the steps, you need to work them. If you weren't working with a sponsor, you need to work with a sponsor. If you were working the steps and were working with a sponsor, you weren't doing it fast enough. You need to do it faster. You need to redouble your efforts, whatever efforts you fell short on. And the alcoholic ego is beautiful. It likes to give reasons. It likes to allow you to become convinced that there's a reason that you went back out. The reason you went back out is you didn't put enough work into the spiritual program of action. That's the only reason why we go back out. It's not because she left or he left or you lost the job or you know, something traumatic happened. That's not the reason. Many of us have lost jobs. Many of us have lost her or him, and we've stayed sober. It's not the outside circumstances that drive us to drink. It's our lack of participation in the spiritual process and the spiritual life. So the one thing I believe we get enough power to do is to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's very rare, but it happens, but it's very rare that we see somebody who fails. Rarely have we seen someone who has failed, who has thoroughly followed the program of recovery. There are those who cannot or will not engage in the recovery process in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love how non-judgmental Bill was when that was written. He doesn't say they're stupid. He doesn't say that they're lame. He says they cannot or will not work the program of recovery. I think we can get the power to work the program of recovery unless we're very, very mentally ill. So that's good news. Now, the bad news is the statistics on Alcoholics Anonymous are abysmal these days. I was surfing some websites the other day, and there's more and more there's non-12-step recovery processes that are becoming available out there. And one of the main reasons is there's been some successful lawsuits by people who've been in recovery processes that have mentioned God and had God as a prominent part of the recovery process. So, you know, that may sound a little bit crazy to you and me, but they've made the case, and successfully, that it's religious and so it shouldn't have governmental funding and it shouldn't be backed up by insurance or whatever. And they're making these cases. So more and more there are non-12-step alternatives out there. Now, I don't have a lot of experience with them. Actually, I probably have zero experience with those. But what they like to do is they like to use our statistics against us. They like to say that 6% of the people that come into AA will be there in a year sober. And 3% of the people that come into AA will be there sober in 5 years. And, you know, I don't know where these statistics come from, but they're reasonably accurate, unfortunately. You know, the people that come in and raise their hand and say they're new to AA, keep track of them if you're a group officer or something. You'll see we lose one hell of a lot of them. And those statistics are being used against us. Now, in the early days of AA, the statistics were 50% of the people that came in and tried, and what I mean by that is they got engaged in the 12-step process, they started to work this. They were taken through the steps with by either Bill or Bob or Clarence or, you know, any of those early knuckleheads. And 50% of them that started that stayed sober. Another 25% after they relapsed and came back and said, oops, I'll really try this time, stayed sober. And they said 25% showed improvement. So there was a 75% recovery rate in early AA. Cleveland, Ohio boasted a 93% recovery rate in the first 10 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was with Clarence was up there just making you get down on your knees and do the prayers and making you go back and do the amends and making you work with other people. I mean, you either do that or you're gone. So the people that were there were more likely to do the work of Alcoholics Anonymous and stay sober. You know, today it's become acceptable to sit in the back of the room and languish, not being held accountable to work the steps, having only a desire to not drink being your membership requirement, and nobody's going to push up on you. That's really what AA has turned into. I'm not making a judgment on that. I think Bill Wilson and some of the members in the 50s and later on decided to throw the doors as wide open as they could be to catch everybody. Throw the doors wide open. Make only a desire to stop drinking a membership requirement. Well, in the early days of AA, there was a lot more than that involved in being in the meetings of AA. You better be doing the steps. You better be working with other people or you're out. You know, so what they did was they threw open the doors in AA during the development of the traditions. Good, bad, or indifferent, again, I'm not judging it. I'm just saying that since that time, you can come into AA and you can be non-participatory. You can be an alkanoid. You know, you can orbit around AA and never really come in for a landing. So I think that's where a lot of our bum statistics are coming from. You know, there's a lot of people who just aren't buying into the recovery process. You know, there are people who couldn't sit 2 minutes in this meeting tonight that have been in AA quite a while. They don't want to hear it. They've got a different perspective on what Alcoholics Anonymous is like, and they don't like to be told that there's work involved because Joe Gerbilfeather never told them there was work. And they just don't buy it, you know, all that newfangled stuff. So before I run out of time, I'm going to move into step 11. Step 11 has been a wonderful step for me. I've got to tell you, I always was seeking contact with God. I was always seeking contact with God. I did it with drugs. I did it with alcohol. I did it however I needed to do it, but I never felt good enough myself. I never felt good enough myself. I was never comfortable with myself. I was never comfortable with my environment. I never felt like I fit in. I never felt like I could say what I wanted to say. Crowds made me really nervous. Public speaking, I'd rather shoot myself. I mean, there was just, I was repressed, okay? I was repressed, and I was using drugs, and I was using alcohol to get out there. I couldn't imagine going to a party without getting some ballast on. You know what I mean? I would get drunk and then go to the party. Most people went to the party and got drunk. I'd get drunk and then go to the party. That's just the way I was. I needed to feel okay about myself. So I was seeking that relationship with God because I believe that that's really what happens with me. When I'm close to God, I am comfortable. That's just the way it works with me. When I've got the power going on that I've achieved in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm pretty much okay wherever, whenever, doing whatever I need to do. I'm all right. And I don't have that anxiety, that crippling anxiety that can border on terror. You remember that terror you used to experience? You know, coming to in the morning wondering, you know, what the hell you did the night before and stuff. So I remember I started to read books when I was 18, spiritual books like Alan Watts and Carlos Castaneda. I went for the real whack stuff in the beginning, you know, like Chariot of the Gods. Just really looking for an answer, for something to make me feel better. I was searching, and I've had an uninterrupted reading schedule since that time, back in the mid to late 70s. where I have devoured about a gazillion billion books. The last house I lived in, there was a library, wall-to-wall books, and most of my books were still in boxes, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I've read Christian literature till it's coming out my ears. I've read about Tibetan Buddhism, American Indian disciplines, Hindu beliefs and practices, the Talmud, you know, the Kabbalah. I mean, I've just soaked all of this stuff up. And because of that innate desire to be one with my Maker. You know what I mean? Now, I'm unorthodox. In my quest, I don't want anybody to listen to what I do and then go do that. I think that the quest for a relationship with God has to be personal, and you need to follow your own muse with it. You know what I mean? I think there's a couple of sins that you can be guilty of in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of them is going after the newcomer predatorially and sexually before they get on their feet and have a chance to integrate into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think the other is to try to shove your version of God, your understanding of Jesus, down somebody else's throat. You know what I mean? I think it's absolutely a sin. Because it is so important for us to have a personal relationship with God, we need to do that personally. You know what I mean? We really shouldn't allow somebody else to do that to us. It's something that is so important to us. We need to find that ourselves. Now, with the guys that I work with, I'll recommend books, but I'll recommend diverse books. You know, I won't just recommend, you know, evangelical Christian literature or something. I mean, I'll give them a spectrum, and some of my guys head toward the Buddhist practices. Some of my guys head toward the Christian practices. Some of my guys don't head anywhere. They just have an innate spirituality that they develop, and they don't need 200 books to do it. You know what I mean? They're just able to achieve a relationship with the power in a way that's personal and that works for them. Now, if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I definitely believe in following the directions in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. There's basically three disciplines in the 11th step. One of them is upon awakening. The other is as we move through the day. And the third is when we retire at night. Again, I'm not going to go through the mechanics of that. If you're in this meeting, you got a big book. You probably got six of them. So go over those mechanics and start to use them. Now, none of us are perfect with this stuff. None of us get up every morning and, you know, have the... I guess some of us do, but, you know, have the perfect ritual. I mean, we're human, and sometimes we get up late, and sometimes we're in a hotel on a business trip, or, you know, the kids wake us up. There's a million things that can happen, but we need to develop a discipline and develop a desire to practice a lot of these concepts. Now, Bill was very, very clear that this was spirituality 101, the instructions in this book, and that you were to broaden and deepen your belief systems through asking some priests and ministers and rabbis for some books, some instructions, maybe some religious practices down the road. It's not at all essential to go back to church if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill Wilson never went back to church, but he took religious instructions from a bunch of different Catholic and Episcopal clergy. He took the religious instruction just because he wanted to broaden and deepen his discipline. Dr. Bob, on the other hand, became very, very religious. And you would see him in the same pew at the same church every single Sunday. He became very, very devout. Broad, roomy, and all-inclusive is the way it is for our spiritual practices. Okay, never exclusive, never forbidding. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. We do not engage in controversy, nor are we allied with any religious denomination, which is a good thing, because this is just me. We all get in here our own way. We all have our own separation experience, separation from alcohol, and we all have our own early newcomer experience. But if you would have told me the day I walked into AA that God was my only hope and that I would have to develop a personal relationship with God or I was going to die, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is, if you would have told me that, I probably would have left. I probably would have walked out of the meeting and said, you know, I'm sorry, that's not going to work for me. I would have been sure that it wouldn't work for me. I would have been wrong, because that's really what Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's about developing a relationship with that power that in times of trial and tribulations will keep us sober when we can't keep ourselves sober because we're powerless over alcohol. But we need to be broad, roomy, and all-inclusive to get the newcomer. You know what I mean? I'm telling you, I would have walked out. I got sober when Jim and Tammy Faye Baker were selling way too many Heavenly Ranch condos. You know, there was like 300 condos and they sold 900 of them, you know. And Jimmy Swaggart was hooking up in the motel with the Texas hookers. I mean, and these were God's front men, okay? So if you're going to tell me that God is my answer, look at these morons out there. They're his front men, and look what they're doing. I'm living a more spiritual life than they are, for God's sake. And I'm drunk out of my mind. So, I mean, I had a lot of prejudice. I had a lot of incorrect thinking going on. So again, I am very, very careful not to scare somebody away. Yes, this is all about our relationship with God and other people and ourselves. But it's not what you think it is if you're a newcomer. It's not about selling flowers in airports. It's not about, you know, it's not about singing in the choir, unless that's, you know, where you're being led. So step 11, seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. The meditative disciplines and the prayer disciplines, there's a million of them out there. Crazy as it may sound, I usually recommend The Idiot's Guide to Meditation for some of the guys that I sponsor. And only because I haven't found yet, I haven't found a better introduction to all the different types of, not all, but many of the different types of meditative disciplines. You can go through that book and you can say, this is not going to work for me, this will work for me, I'll try this, this doesn't look too good. You know, it's like a cafeteria menu of different types of meditative practices. Now, most of the meditative books that you buy are on a specific discipline, you know? So that's a good book for somebody that doesn't really know anything about meditation. Now, my own personal practice is I can't even get out of bed without starting this. I just can't. I can't even get out of bed without starting my prayer and meditative disciplines. Because one of the lessons I learned from sponsor number one was he said, Chris, I want you to start praying. And every morning I want you to pray. And he goes, I know you, Chris, you're going to miss a lot of days just because you're a nut. So what I want you to do is I want you to pay attention to the days that you do it, and then pay attention to the days you don't, and compare those days. And it was so blatant that everything that possibly could screw up would screw up if I missed my prayers. And everything went pretty satisfactorily when I said them. It was beyond coincidence. It had to have something to do with the way I slid through life, the way I slid through the day. So I became a believer in that type of prayer and meditation from early on. And I highly recommend anybody to begin this journey. It's a journey without an end. Begin the journey of developing the relationship with God and broaden and deepen that as the years go by. Now, step 12 is really the culmination of everything that we've learned in all of our spiritual disciplines and where we are at as human beings in Alcoholics Anonymous and as spiritual beings. It is the most natural thing in the world that after you've gone through this process, you are going to want to share this information with somebody else. You're just going to want, it's like finding the cure of cancer and not wanting to tell people. It's just not really going to happen. If you've done this thing right, you're going to be looking for somebody to work with. just about everybody that goes through the steps with me, I do not have to push them into sponsorship. It's something they want to do. Chris, how can I find people to work with? It's not like, I don't want to work with anybody. I'm no good as a sponsor. If you go through the steps the right way, you're going to want to carry that message to other people. Now, I got to tell a short story about what happened about 5 years ago. I was asked to speak at the New Jersey convention. I was to do step 12 in the Alcathon. There was like a 12-hour period of time where somebody was doing one of the steps. And I was to share for 20 minutes. Our friend Benny was chairing me. I was supposed to share for 20 minutes on step 12 and then open the meeting up to discussion. Now, you're pretty safe in the Burnsville group sharing a conservative recovery agenda. You know, not too many people in this group are going to say, "You're full of shit," and like walk out. It's just, we're pretty much on the same page. But when you speak at a convention or something, that's a whole different ballgame. Anyway, here's how I handled it. And I thought it was pretty appropriate. I shared for 10 minutes on my experience with steps 1 through 9. And how I had gone, 1 through 11. How I'd gone through steps 1 through 11. And then I shared on 10 minutes on how I take other people through steps 1 through 11. And this guy raises his hand when it's share time. And Mary Beth had shared earlier. And he starts cutting her down, which I didn't like too much. And then he goes off on me. This is basically what he said. "I don't know about all that crap that I heard you sharing about up there. You know, you sound like some kind of crazy counselor to me. I'll tell you how I've been working with newcomers is I take them and I throw them in the back seat of the car and I take them off to a meeting and I love them until they can love themselves. And I don't know about all this other step crap that you've been talking about up there." Now, I took exception to this, okay? I'm not a perfect individual. So when he was finally done his tirade, I basically shared, you know, "Thanks a lot for sharing. You know, we do have a basic text which really has laid out kind of the Alcoholics Anonymous process. And there's actually a chapter in there called Working with Others, believe it or not. And I don't know, I've gone through that chapter a couple times and I don't remember seeing anything in that chapter about throwing them in a car or loving them till they love themselves." This guy freaked out. He freaked out. He got up and started throwing chairs around. I've never seen a meeting stopped in the middle of a meeting, but they called the meeting off and everybody headed toward the exits. It was like a fire drill, I'm telling you. And I'm sitting up there with my friend Benny and he's like looking at me like, "What the hell did you do?" But that was the Alcathon debacle of 2001 at the New Jersey convention. And, I'm sorry, but I don't think I was inappropriate. You know what I mean? I really don't. I think it's kind of important to carry the message, carry this message, not the chuck them in the back of the car message. I'm not saying that there's not room for grabbing the really sick people and, you know, holding them by the hand. There's certainly room for that. But there's a bigger deal here in AA. There's a lot more work to do. You know, the difference between what he was talking about and what I was talking about is this. He was simply encouraging the people he worked with to not drink. What I was talking about is offering them freedom from alcoholism. Now, there's a lot of difference between relief and freedom. There's a lot of difference between encouragement and offering them a program of freedom. There just is. And again, you have to have experienced the freedom to know what I'm talking about. There's a lot of people that have been in Alcoholics Anonymous a long time and have not experienced that freedom because they haven't worked the steps. Now, one of the things that we all need to be aware of in Alcoholics Anonymous today is in the late 80s, rehabs popped up everywhere. It became a huge business because insurance companies were playing ball. I mean, I knew guys that had been in 13 rehabs, and every single time the insurance company paid the 28 days. Can you imagine? So somewhere along the line, the insurance companies got pretty strong about being able to say no. And if you do a lot of wet drunk work, you know what I'm talking about. You can. It's very, very hard to find somebody who doesn't have any money a 28-day stay. It's pretty hard. You have to go to the Salvation Armies. You have to do things like that. There's not a lot of rehabs out there. And there's even if you have insurance, there's not a lot of rehabs out there that's going to give you 28 days. They don't believe in it anymore. And, you know, when that was first happening, I was really upset and I had a resentment. I had to write, you know, column number one, insurance companies. Column number two, killing alcoholics. Okay? They're right. Okay? These rehabs are not working. The recidivism rate from these rehabs is just abysmal. Anybody that's been through rehab, there was about 80 people in rehab when I went through, and I know two of them that are still around. So, you know, can you really blame the insurance companies for not continuing to pay for something that didn't really seem like it was working? But what they're still doing is they're still getting you to the point where your vital signs are all right. You can go into an emergency, you can take somebody into an emergency room, you can take somebody into a detox, and usually they'll keep you until your vital signs are all right. And then they'll release you. You know, they may still be buzzed. So what I'm getting at is it's becoming more and more important that we hone our 12-step skills. Because otherwise people are going to die. We got lazy and we got soft with all these rehabs. And because the insurance companies are pulling back, because there's fewer and fewer programs, there was a statistic that over 600 rehabs closed in 1994 alone in America. When the insurance companies started pulling back, it's not a good business anymore. You can't keep the doors open. So we need to start honing some of our real serious 12-step skills. I'm not advocating detoxing somebody in your house. We favor hospitalization for the befogged, and they said that in 1938, and I think it's still true. But after that, there may be no place else for these people to go with 5 or 6 days right out of alcoholic drinking than Alcoholics Anonymous, and to hook up with us. There may be, we're the last house on the left, you know what I mean? So it's becoming more and more of a very, very serious thing that we work with newcomers in an intense way. The chapter Working with Others starts off, nothing so much ensures our immunity from alcohol than intensive work with other alcoholics, like they did in the early days. Intensive work means intensive work. It doesn't mean, here's my phone number, give me a call if you feel weird. How many people ever called anybody that gave them phone numbers like that? You know what I mean? Oh yeah, sure, I'll call the guy and say, oh, I'm really feeling bad, you know, and I'm really, you know, I want to kill people, and I'm really depressed, and, you know, my life is terrible, and I'm a big loser. How are you doing? You know, hey, who is gonna call? I never called anybody that gave me those numbers. I barely called my sponsor because I felt like such an idiot. So there's more to working with other people than giving out your phone numbers. I suggest getting their phone numbers and calling them. You know, they'll be surprised. Who's this? This is Chris from AA. How you doing? You know, do that. Go to beginners meetings. Go to places where you're going to find new alcoholics. I still do several rehab commitments because I'll tell you, you want to find the sick ones, you'll find them in rehab. They're not. They don't even know they've got a problem yet sometimes, these people in rehab. You know, I speak a lot at a number of places and, you know, you guys are in trouble. You know, alcoholism is progressive and it's fatal. You guys are in trouble. It's just unbelievable. So, it is unbelievable, you know, to try to get through to some of these people. You're going to die! No, I'm not. I guess we all got to die. I mean, there's just no getting through these people. And working with other people. Working with people. You know, I work with a lot of relapsers, and that can be frustrating because sometimes there's just a wall. And I'll I'll do the first step with somebody. I'll say, do you understand that you're alcoholic and you're powerless over alcohol? Your body is going to make sure that you drink yourself to death, and you've got a mind that will not allow you to separate from alcohol for any period, any serious period of time. And your life is as unmanageable as it can possibly be. It's an absolute nightmare. Do you understand that? Yeah. Well, do you understand that you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, we've got a way that you can recover from that? And you can actually become happy, joyous, and free. You know, you can mend all your relationships. You can become a good worker. You know, your children will want to be in the same room with you again. Pets won't leave, you know, run away because of your anxiety. Do you understand that? Yeah. Okay, well, what I want you to do is I want you to go to these five meetings every single week without fail, and you've got to come over to my house this Saturday, and we're going to start working the steps. Oh, wow, man. Like, I don't know. I washed my car on Saturday, and, you know, I told my ex-girlfriend that, you know, I'd watch her dog for her, and, you know, what don't you get? You just told me you understand that you're dying and that you need treatment for your alcoholism. I'm offering you treatment, and you're, I mean, think about this. Let's say you had a term. Then there's some serious follow-up that has to take place. But rarely do we see anybody that doesn't go in remission. What would you do? You'd say, where the hell is this taking place and how soon can I get there? You have a sanity where it concerns your recovery. Well, with alcoholism, inherent in the illness, alcoholism is an inability to really see just how much trouble you're in. So as a 12-stepper, you need to develop techniques to get through that delusion. It's a mistake to call it denial. The difference between denial and delusion is denial is, you know, I know Dave is sitting over here, and denial would be to say, Dave's not over there. Okay, delusion is to really not think Dave is over there. He's really not over there. That's the difference between denial and delusion. We don't have denial, because that would indicate that we actually know and are saying the opposite. We're deluded. We don't know. We don't know. You know, we'll say, yeah, and we really don't know. So you have to develop some real good techniques in getting the first couple of steps across to the newcomer so that they're motivated enough to follow the rest of the program. You know, what I would hope for is that everybody in here listening is going to try to develop the ability to be able to offer the suffering alcoholic a program that will lead to their freedom, rather than to just encourage the other alcoholics to keep coming and not drinking. You know what I mean? Practicing the principles in all of our affairs. Another exercise that I ask people to do who work with me is, with different color highlighters, when you start to work with me, I want you to get a brand new big book without all your stupid little sayings and, you know, the little slogans and, you know, your. I want a new big book and a bunch of different highlighters. And one of the things I'm going to ask you to do is highlight all the instructions in the book and then highlight all the spiritual principles in the book, because I want you to know what going to any lengths looks like. Because how many of us were asked in the beginning, are you willing to go to any lengths? Do you want what we have? And you said, yeah. But you don't know what any lengths is, and you don't know what they have. Sometimes you'll take a pass on what they have, you know what I mean? If the wrong person asks you. So I want the people that I work with to understand what the recovery process is. And to practice the principles, again, I would be the last person in the world to say I practice the principles really well. You can ask Mary Beth if you want validation of that, or any of my sponsees. They know better than to put me on a pedestal, I'll tell you. But recovery, it's essential to recognize the spiritual principles and try to work them, and to ask God to help you to work them, and to use your prayer and meditative disciplines to move you toward working those. It's absolutely essential. Alcoholism is your problem, not alcohol. I'll tell you what, if alcohol was your problem, stop drinking. It'd be like if yogurt made you crazy and violently sick, and you said things that you didn't remember the next day, you could just stop eating yogurt. You know, you wouldn't need to go to Yogurt Anonymous and talk to other people and find out how they don't eat yogurt one day at a time. You know, and go to the yogurt rehab to carry a message into the yogurt rehab. I mean, you would just be able to not eat yogurt. Well, we can't just not drink, okay? We can't. We're powerless over alcohol. We have to find the power to be able to separate. So practicing the principles is our participation in the separation from alcohol. We have to do our part. God or the power does that part. It always works. I'm telling you, it always works when we participate enough in it. Now, that is good news. It's good news to the alcoholic. You can survive a progressively fatal illness that kills at least 95% of the people that have it. You can survive it by practicing this recovery principle, by going to the clinical trial with the 12 procedures and doing the follow-up. You can survive this illness, and you can help other people survive this illness, and you can just have an absolutely wonderful life doing it. I never understood the people who would share, "I'm a grateful alcoholic," especially in my first 6 months. I'll show you how grateful you are. I'll slash both of your tires in the parking lot. Then we'll see you share how goddamn grateful you are, you idiot. You know, I want to see gratitude in action with the flat tires. You know, I couldn't understand. I mean, my life I'd been dragged to the toilet with my alcoholism. I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff that happened to me. It was just a horror show. And I come into AA and I'm a grateful alcoholic. You out of your mind? You have any idea what I've just been through? But today I understand what being a grateful alcoholic is, because I'll tell you what, my life is better than it ever was before alcohol. It's better than it ever was with alcohol. It's much better than it ever was with any of those things. I'm not going to tell you that my best, my worst day sober is better than my best day drinking, because that's not true. I had some great days drinking, boy. I'll tell you, you know. And then I just started to allow myself to be overserved. You know how that is. You're going for that, being able to step out easy and being really cool and suave and macho, and you just go a little bit too far, and you end up being a violent psycho pig from hell. And it just happened just way too many times for me. But I had some good times, you know. The times of the high school parties where, you know, there'd be a keg and all the girls and the rock and roll, and there'd be a fight, you know. And it'd just be great, and you'd crash a car later, you know. And you'd have all these war stories the next day. I love that, but I can never. I tried to go get back to that with like 15 years of drinking. I tried to re-experience those days, and they're over, man. You know, once your liver and your pancreas have deteriorated to a certain state, you are pathetic. You're going to be a pathetic, drunken, you know, knee-walking, tongue-chewing, not able to operate your own pant zipper alcoholic. You know what I mean? That's what's going to happen. And it is a great thing that Alcoholics Anonymous came into this world, and we can participate in it. And with that, I will close, and I'll see if Dave wants to call on hands because I'm lazy.
Thank you, Chris. Anybody have any questions, comments?
Mm. Yeah. Hey, Bob.
I know it's getting better. There's a website. If Bill was here, he'd be able to spout off the address. But there's a website for the intergroup in New Jersey, and it posts the new meetings. There's a page with flyers. There'll be 20 or 30 announcements. And I looked at it one day and I said, my God, 3/4 of these are big book meetings that are opening up. And they're presentation style meetings. They're educational style meetings, which would have been unheard of 10 years ago. So, Berkeley Heights, Bernardsville, Hackettstown, there's a number.
What?
Neckong. There's been Chatham. There's a number of meetings out there that have made it acceptable to carry a conservative recovery message. And it's getting better. You can find the message now where, I don't know, 10 years ago, you had to find it on tape or, in Denver or Southern California or something.
If anybody does know where there's one in their area, you can come up and maybe we can point towards where there are. Because, Chris just hit on a couple of them. There's many that we know of.
It's Rockaway. A lot of people from those meetings in New Jersey come here, and a lot of us go there. It's like a fellowship inside of fellowship.
Yes.
Hi. I'm Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Chris, in regards to working with those people, I don't know who else we can't transmit. I've never experienced getting off the game. You've had get off the game so far where you feel that you're only sharing information rather than experience and shows or maybe just suggested that you don't know what people put a lot of.
That's a great question. There was a period of time where I was like overly evangelical as far as carrying the message, and I would say yes to everybody that came up and said, "Hey, would you sponsor me?" Yes, And I gotta be serious. There was about 5 or 6 psychopaths that got a hold of me at this time. I shouldn't have touched these guys with a 10-foot pole. They were dishonest and they were using on the side and. There were predators in the rooms, trying to get every woman, and all this stuff is going on, and I was just kind of naive, and I went through like sponsorship burnout. I was chirping like a squirrel after a while, and my sponsor said, "Chris, I'm pulling you out. We're pulling you out for a couple of quarters," and I did. There was some guys that I was still sponsoring, but I went low maintenance on them. A couple of them are sitting right here. And I had to regroup. I really had to regroup. There's a principle of rotation that I believe very, very strongly in. And there's some things that people don't use that with. But I think there's times when we need to rotate out of things that we're doing and do different things. The guy I went through the steps with the last time believes that circuit speakers should rotate. They should take a year off, you know. And I'm not saying that we should take time off from sponsorship. I'm just saying that, you know, rotation is a spiritual principle. And I had to rotate out of that real intense work. I was sponsoring over 50 guys at one time, and they were all nuts. You know what I mean? And you can't deal with that without suffering a little bit. You know, you need to find your comfort level. I don't know if that made any sense.
We're all nuts.
I met you too.
Yeah, Dave, I also, in my experience, sometimes I intuitively don't know what I'm able to accept and not accept. And I find that naturally, the times that I just can't really work with people, they disappear. You know, it's like all of a sudden I'm just not carrying the load I had, and something comes up in my life, and I have to devote my time to that thing in my life. Or there's times when I think my life is out of control, and guys come out of the woodwork, and now I'm working with like 5-6 guys. You know, and that's exactly what I needed. So sometimes you just have to kind of sit back and accept whatever's presented to you. That's my experience. Anyone else? Questions, comments? Yes?
Hey, Brad.
Hey.
You talked earlier about the evolution of the way you think things. You have to, then you want to, and you said that you basically that you alcohol from this life. For myself, that seems almost a little dangerous, though. Do you find that just, it seems like you want, if you do that,
I'm sorry, what was that last sentence?
Oh,
I gotcha. You could. I mean, I've known people who, 20 years sober, they're still going to 16 meetings a week, and they haven't taken their wife to a movie in 30 years. But there's a certain amount of balance that you have to have in your life. But what I've found is the more AA I've put into my life, the more effective I've become in the other areas of my life. My career path like really took off when I got very involved in AA, which, you know, that it's almost contradictory, but it did. My relationship skill sets got better, so I was having more relationships. I was able to be a better friend, so I had a million friends. I was able to get into some really good physical shape that I always wanted to do. So I'm not saying that you hide out in AA and you get meeting dependent. And that if you miss two or three meetings, you need to go back to the well to fill back up. I'm not talking about that. I'm really talking about more about the spiritual living that AA takes us to, because that'll open up everything in your life. You'll be a better father, a better worker, a better boss, a better uncle, you know, a better boyfriend. You'll be better at everything. But no, you don't hide in AA. We definitely are supposed to be out there living life. You know, we're supposed to be on the firing line of life. Again, some of the guys that I got so with, they got so spiritual that they just retreated. I know two guys that just went to the coffee shop. You know, 16 hours a day, you'd find them in the coffee shop. They got real sober. You know, they didn't want to deal with anything else. You know, you have to be careful about going to spiritual extremes. I think it talks a little bit about that in the 12 and 12. You don't want to be so heavenly, you're no earthly good.
Yeah,
website is nnjaa.org.
nnjaa.org?
The second is you talked about encouraging people to try out a wide variety of spiritual things to find theirs. What happens if you find one like Buddhism that doesn't believe in God?
Buddhism believes in the power. You know, it's not basically a monotheistic deity, but it's a practice that brings you to the power. So that's just my understanding of it. There's people in this room that can talk more on Buddhism than I can. But you know, whenever you start to define the attributes of God, you box in something that's bigger than the box. So I don't know. I really don't know. I think probably there are people that need a personal deity that they can conceive of in human terms. But there's also people who can, like the American Indian or the Buddhist tradition, that can believe in the spirit of the universe. And again, it's broad, roomy, and all-inclusive. And the power's there. It basically says if you seek it, it's going to be there.
Okay.
And that's kind of opinion, you know, so take that for what it is.
All right, if there's no other questions, it's that time. And we'd like to thank everybody for coming, and have a nice way to